This talk is brought to you by Angela Marie Patnode, Transformational Coach and Spiritual Teacher. Let's see, last week we talked about Deepa Ma. So I introduced Deepa Ma last week and some of her teachings. And to give you a really brief synopsis of her, she was a Buddhist master, is what she was called, and a really forward thinker for her time. She was born in 1911, suffered tremendous loss in her early years, was married off at the age of 12, couldn't have children. In the Indian tradition, that's not acceptable in India. And her husband continued to support her and be with her during that time. And she ended up getting pregnant at 35, lost her first child after birth, gave birth to another child at 39, she lived, and then birthed to a son a couple years after that, and he died. And was in such grief and loss that she could hardly function in her life. Ended up starting on the Buddhist path and meditation, and that totally changed her life around. And her husband died during that time too. So she had a lot of intense loss for herself. And she really brought home the teachings of mindfulness and compassion and love. And she was this tiny little woman. And this a picture on the front of the book about her was actually taken here in America. She was brought to the United States to teach at the Insight Meditation Center in Massachusetts. And this was a picture of her taken there. And she was the teacher of Jack Kornfield, Sharon Salzberg, Joseph Goldstein, who are all very prominent teachers in the United States who went over, studied Buddhism in India and Tibet, Nepal, brought it back to the United States and started sharing it with Americans. And Jack ended up co-founding Spirit Rock Meditation Center and IMS. So it's she has a lot of influence in a really positive way in bringing Buddhism here. She taught out of her little apartment in Calcutta, where people would show up in groves and sit with her. And last week we talked about, she has 10 lessons for life, or 10 lessons for living life. And we talked about the first five last week. And so I want to talk about the second five this week. And before I do, I want to share a couple other things that I think are just gems in this book about her. This is from the chapter called, How Are You Living Your Life? The whole path of mindfulness is this, whatever you are doing, be aware of it. The partner of a spiritual teacher once said, I know he's learning something because he's less difficult to live with. Insights that are genuine change our whole way of being. They make us gentler with each other and with the planet. And when insights, that word insight, what that means is when we're sitting in meditation or we're at a retreat, it can happen outside of meditation. It can happen when we're washing the dishes or we're having a conversation. Something comes out of our mouth. Maybe you've had this experience where you're saying something as if it were fact. And then in that moment, you have this realization going, wait, that's not actually what I thought it was. That's not truth. Like there's this knowing inside that wakes you up to your own words, your own thoughts. Has anyone experienced that before? It's okay if you haven't. So that can be an insight. Or you're in meditation and there's this moment, this knowing, where all of a sudden you have this knowing that you're connected to the person next to you. And you can't explain it, you can't put it into words, but there's just this knowing, this awareness. That's an insight. Insights are unmistakable when you have them. It's outside of anything you've ever thought. It's outside of anything that the mind can produce. It's an experience in the moment. It's a knowing. So that's what she's talking about.
May I ask you a question?
Uh-huh.
Do you feel, does it matter? Is it gender-based, and the only reason I ask that is because I truly believe, and I don't know whether Eric agrees with it or not, but females tend to be much more insightful. Is that true?
Well, according to Deepa Ma,
you might be a little partial.
Yeah. there's something that I shared last week. Let's see if I can find it. That I think speaks to that really well. Questions are great.
Curious.
Yeah. This one's actually written by Joseph Goldstein, and it's titled There's Hope for Men.
Mm-hmm.
Deepa Ma once said, "Women have an advantage over men because they have more supple minds. It may be difficult for men to understand this because they are men." I asked her, "Is there any hope for us?" This is Joseph asking. She answered, "The Buddha was a man and Jesus was a man, so there is hope for men too."
Well,
it's just so precious.
It was believed that the big disadvantage that men have is that we can only use one side of our brain at a time, whereas supposedly women can use both sides of their brain at one time.
Right.
Have you heard that?
I haven't heard that. What I do know, or what I experience, is that in our culture, that men are taught not to live from their heart, right? And that is the connection. That is the connection with spirit. That is the connection with our own essence. That's the connection with other people. Because of that, not because of it, but that can contribute to more of that disconnect or having a more difficult time. When you go on retreat, it's oftentimes more women than men. Women, I don't know if women are just more open to it, but there's a study that was done that some of you might have heard this before, but a study that was done just in the last couple of years, I think, about a group of people that were asked to just sit and watch their thoughts. Kind of like what meditation would be, right? Mm-hmm. Sit and watch their thoughts for 15 minutes. That was it, 15 minutes. And they had an option as they were watching their thoughts to shock themselves. Like press a button and receive a shock. Right? That was an option as they were sitting there just being with their thoughts. It was something like 20 or 30% of the women shock themselves, and 80% of the men shock themselves.
When they were having a thought, or when they were having like a negative
during those 15 minutes, whatever the thought was, just having thoughts.
They would rather shock themselves.
They would rather shock themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know any more depth to that study, if there were other things done with that, but it could, my guess, this is a total guess, but it could be that as thoughts were arising, there was emotion that was coming up that was difficult to be with. I don't know. That's a guess. Or who knows? Who knows what else? But it's something that it doesn't have to be that way, right? It doesn't have to be that it's easier for women. I think that's just what's unfolded. Thanks for your question.
Thank you.
Jim. Yeah. Enlightened or not, the question remains, how are you living your life? It's a simple test, but an important one. How do you wash the dishes? How do you react when someone cuts you off on the freeway? That's part of why we're looking at what do we want to let go of? What do we want to set as an intention? Because it brings this meditation practice into our daily life. How do we want to show up in our life for ourselves and the people that we're with?
So it comes back to tolerance and acceptance, right?
Tolerance, yes and no. Just depends how you define that. If it's just like, I'll put up with you, or it's, I will open to you as you are. Acceptance being, here's what is. Here's the moment as it is. Can I open to that? Can I open to the unknown and being okay with that? Can I open to this person being as they are? Can I open to this person saying no to me? Can I open to this person saying yes? Can I open to this person reacting to me right now? Can I open to my own reaction right now? So there's lots of different levels of acceptance and acceptance in different parts of our life. So this was written by Ajahn Tanasante, I think is how you pronounce it. Don't quote me on that pronunciation, though. And he says, coming from California, my personal image of a powerful woman was an Amazon who jumps in the back of a pickup truck with a chainsaw and is going to sort out the world. But the power of Deepa Ma was the power of touching the heart. I felt completely known by her, and yet I didn't need to hide or be ashamed, because I felt both totally known and totally loved at the same time. I remember writing a letter home to my friends after experiencing that kind of love, telling them that if my journey had ended at that point, it would have been good enough. Just having made contact with that profound love was enough. She was reflecting our own essence. Like when you looked at her, she was reflecting. She was a mirror for what is within you. It's the experience I had when I had eye contact with the Dalai Lama when I was in India. And I didn't have that much of a spiritual background. I'd been on one retreat. I didn't really have a meditation practice. And I had eye contact with him, and I just broke into tears. And I didn't know why. And now I can see it's because I saw a reflection of my own essence in that moment, because he's so clear. There's no veil. And that's what Deepa Ma was holding for people, is that clarity of love and compassion for each person. Beautiful. Okay, so let's move into the lessons. So in review, lesson one was choose one meditation practice and stick with it, instead of trying multiple kinds. Find one that resonates and stick with it, and don't leave it when it gets hard. Lesson two, meditate every day. Very important. My life drastically changed when I started meditating every day. Lesson three, any situation is workable. I'm purposely not going into detail with these because I want to move into 5 through 10 or 6 through 10. And if you want to hear more detail on these, you can listen to last week's teaching is on my website, so you can listen to that there. Lesson four, practice patience. Patience, very important. And lesson five, free your mind of all the stories, the attachment, the identification with the stories. All right, so lesson six, cool the fire of emotions. When someone came to visit Deepa Ma, it didn't matter who it was or what emotional state they were embroiled in or what the circumstances were. Deepa Ma treated each person with complete, compassionate acceptance. And this is a lesson for me, because sometimes when a friend is angry, I take that on. You know, what's my part? And did I do something? Did I say something? And I absorb that anger. And so, how can we show up for someone who's angry and not take that in a personal level? Can we offer the same acceptance to the emotions that arise in us? Can we see our emotional states as visitors to be treated with kindness instead of judgment? Can we simply allow anger and other emotions to arise and pass away without reacting in ways that might be harmful? And I want to bring up a personal note that last week I had a reactionary pattern. I was in a meeting with some other women, and there were some dynamics that were happening, and I took it as something personal, and I reacted to it as from something that had happened when I was in middle school. Wow. It came up, and wow. It was like one of those moments where an hour later I went, oh my God, what just happened? Wow.
So it took you an hour to recognize that that was something from middle school?
It took me a while, yeah, because I was in the pattern. I was in it in that moment, and I went into my old passive-aggressive mode, And then I got home and I took some breaths and went, oh my gosh, what just happened?
That's amazing that you're that reflective.
Yeah, and that's part of the meditation practice. Part of this whole journey is having that awareness of, oh my God, what? Okay, that's not how I want to be in my life. And so I reached out to somebody that was in the meeting and asked what was happening for her and then explained what I was going through and apologized. And so it doesn't mean that all reactions stop. It means that we're kind to ourselves when they come up. We make amends if we need to make amends. We come into awareness of that pattern again. Oh, there it is. I mean, that pattern hadn't come up in a long time for me. And just the dynamics of what unfolded, it's just what happened. And I had to practice some forgiveness on myself. Like I was, you know, Angela, why is that happening? I thought you were done with that. But it did. And it did. So how do I come back to the path, come back to my center, and walk forward from there without beating myself up and digging myself into a trench? Lesson number 7, have fun along the way. Have fun along the way. I love that. I am quite happy. If you come to meditate, you will also be happy, Deepa Ma says. Jack Engler, who I'm not sure who Jack Engler was, maybe a student of hers, asked Deepa Ma about the place of fun in Buddhist practice. This all sounds very gray, he said. Getting rid of the passion, getting rid of anger, getting rid of desire. It seems like a kind of a gray existence. Where's the juice? And Deepa Ma says, oh, you don't understand, she burst out laughing. There is so much sameness in ordinary life. We are always experiencing everything through the same set of lenses. Once greed, hatred, and delusion are gone, you see everything fresh and new all the time. Every moment is new. Life was dull before. Now, every day, every moment is full of taste and zest. Just love how she says that. So beautiful and lively and shows the vibrancy of life once those veils get thinner and start peeling away. And there's a picture in the book of her where she was at a group teaching, and she was teaching, and her grandson was present, who was two years old, and her grandson was getting upset about something, and she's giving this Dharma talk, right? And she brings her grandson into her lap and, you know, pats him on the back, rubs him on the back, and, you know, gives him some little love pats, and then she takes this toy truck and just puts it on her head and does the Dharma talk with this toy truck on her head. And here's a picture of her with the toy truck on top of her head. Like, not fazed by her grandson having this little 2-year-old temper tantrum, you know, giving him some love and having fun with it. Lesson 8, simplify. Live simply. A very simple life is good for everything. Too much luxury is a hindrance to practice. So she's talking not only about stuff, like material things, but simplify your thoughts as far as, are you engaging in conversation that means nothing to you? I mean, you're talking about that with your family, like being aware of, am I just talking for the sake of talking? Is it really connecting with this person? Or am I blaming people for something? She's talking about simplifying in many different levels. One student observed that while we in the West think we need a lot of physical space, what Deepa Ma had was a vast psychic space. Beautiful. Her guideline for herself and her students was to live honestly and never blame others. And then lesson number 9, cultivate the spirit of blessing. And the way Deepa Ma approached everything was to bless a person, bless a plane when she got on the plane, bless the taxi driver and the person who pumped the gas into the taxi, or the person who served her meal. She was always blessing people and blessing a form of gratitude and well-wish, loving-kindness. So that was her way of being with others. She offered blessings to all. She blessed people from head to toe, blowing on them, chanting over them, stroking their hair. Love that image. And then lesson number 10, it's a circular journey. Meditation integrates the whole person. The beauty of the spiritual journey is that the path invariably takes us back around to our point of departure. When Deepa Ma suffered her childlessness, her husband wisely suggested that she adopt everyone as her own child. But in those difficult days before she encountered the teachings that would transform her life, she was lost in sadness for what she lacked, trying to fill a hole. By the end of her life, though, Deepa Ma had indeed become a mother to all. In place of that hole that needed to be filled, there simply was a heart open to all.
So that's how she coped with her loss, or her losses?
What's that?
Of her children and her husband?
The meditation? Or it was...
The blessing?
Yeah, like that's part of it. That was part of her path. You know, when she started meditating, when she started receiving the teachings of the Buddhist teachings, is specifically what she was learning, it transformed her life. And in that place of suffering, she was in a huge place of loss and grief, but what had happened is she was identified with that grief. It started to become her story, right? It was the ego's way of holding on. And who am I without my kids? Who am I without my husband? Right? And when she started to walk that spiritual path, that veil started to release of that identification. Oh, I'm more than needing to be the mother of these children that didn't survive. There's so much more. There's all these people that I can be connected, or that I am connected to, truly, that I'm connected to everything. She started to see life in a much different way. And so the veil of the ego softened, and she saw through that. And from that softening, her perspective on life changed. The identification with the grief and the loss disappeared.
She was a very strong person to be able to overcome all of that.
Yeah, and she had tremendous physical ailments up to that point. But as she started to let go of that identification, of that grief, her health came back.
Most people would have been consumed by all of that loss.
Yeah, or for a certain amount of time, or, you know, some people come out of it too. Yeah. We're going to wrap up, because we're a little bit over again. I just want to be conscious of the time. Thank you all for your patience in my extension of class. So I want to wrap up the teaching for tonight in her life lessons. I think she has a lot to share. Thank you for coming tonight, and I really appreciate your presence and all that you've contributed to this class. May we all be free, happy, and peaceful. Namaste.
Namaste. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.